This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Well, the existence of Jesus might be in question, but ours is not. Welcome to Non Sequitur. Okay. All right, good. Usually that's the time where we hear the stream has dropped or something like that. Just making sure. Usually when I kill openings like that, something bad happens technical. So it looks like we're good. We're pushing forward. Welcome to the show, everyone. We are having a debate. We're having a debate this evening on the hysterectomy of Jesus. I say that I know that sounded corny, but I say that because in reality, I actually the first time, actually John, I think you were there that first episode we did on Jesus mythicism. But I actually said that, not meaning to. I actually said we're having a debate on the hysterectomy of Jesus,
yeah.
And that would be a completely different story. So. Well, by the way, welcome back, John. This is your now 76th appearance out of 300. This is episode number 300. So congrats. And welcome back.
Yes. No, I'm pretty excited to be here.
And actually joining us for the second time. And well, this is his 1.5th appearance. Is that a word? 1.5th, Steve? Is that a word?
Yeah, it's close enough. We're going to go with that.
Because the first time he was here, he was a little ahead of himself in the video. Couldn't keep up with himself. But welcome back. Just kidding. Welcome back, Chris. It's good to have you here as well.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, last time I was here, I was supposed to be translating for Mr. ID. So I think that tells you how this is going to go. It's like my mind automatically just goes dumb. So,
And it's interesting tonight. Usually, we've had several debates on whether or not Jesus existed, and what's different about this one is that there are actually two atheists that are going to be having this conversation, which I think is. Or are you agnostic, Chris? I don't want to box you in.
Agnostic.
Okay.
Philosophical agnostic.
There's no need to add any of the rest of that on there. Steve didn't ask you the question. I did.
He's one of my peeps.
But anyway, welcome. Yeah. Welcome back, sir. So as always, let's run through what we've got. A big next 2 weeks actually coming up. Tomorrow, Aaron Ra will be back. He will be also going against another atheist, but this atheist believes that he has mathematical proof for the existence of God and that the world was created. Now, I am just as confused as you are And we'll find out how that plays out. But we look forward to having Arn back. On Wednesday, I will be on Fully Deconverted at 5 o'clock. So check that out if you want to. And then that night on this show, Ole Anthony, who is the gentleman responsible for taking down Robert Tilton in a big sting that happened in the, I believe it was the late, early 2000s. And he will be here to talk about how that went down and the other kind of cases they worked on, which included people like Kenneth Copeland and Benny Hinn. Interesting thing there, too, is that he is also a Christian and runs a, not really a church, but like a religious group. But he was actually policing his own, which I think is a really good way to be. On Thursday, McCamey Manor will be here. That's the haunted house that nobody has yet to get to that I am going to try to convince John to go to because it's right in his backyard. Okay, no, John is not going. I'm kidding. I wouldn't let you do that. I like you too much. And then next Wednesday, Miles Powers will be here. Really excited about that. Jeff Holliday will be also with us that that evening. And Katie Paulson. Sorry about that. I'll tell you why my mind's scattered in just a second. But join us for that. We're going to be all going through Miles Powers' involvement with the protocol because he tried out Jilly's cabbage juice diet for a little bit. And then finally, on Black Friday, next Friday, the 23rd, we finally got an answer from Lord Rael and his cult. Lord Rael, of course, is the reincarnation of Jesus. And he didn't like the first episode that we did on him. So he's sending out his emissaries. I believe his Lord Vice Chancellor of Raeldom. I believe that's his official title. But he'll be with us on Black Friday. So I think that's very fitting. I just wanted to mention real quickly, Steve, have you seen that? Did you see the show from last night's Smoking Nun?
I didn't get a chance to watch all of it.
We covered a story that I figured that I need to talk to you about this just for the first couple of minutes. And I want to get these guys' opinions too. But the PC culture is getting a little crazy because Colorado, there's a college campus in Colorado that has pretty much told the students that you can't use the phrase long time no see.
I'm going to go
to people who can't see.
I did not watch this last night. Like I said, I was busy with other things. But I'm going to go on a limb here. And I swear to you, I'm pulling this out my ass, but please tell me if I'm right or wrong. Is this somehow related to like PC as in like it might offend a blind person?
That's what I thought. It does mention that, but oddly enough, and I'm going to read you what it says, guys. And I saw Godless Engineer's face, which is the same one that I had. But it says that long time no see is considered offensive. It's a non-inclusive language at Colorado State University. It's viewed as derogatory towards those of Asian descent.
Wait, I don't think I heard that. I'm going to turn up my volume a little bit. Could you say that again a little slower? Because I'm sure I didn't hear what I thought I did.
Yeah, this is real. This is real.
It says that a
Colorado State University administrators. Go ahead.
I was going to explain to Steve. Okay, Steve, and please nobody take this as me being racist. Asian people tend to have very slitty eyes and therefore cannot see that is what they mean. It's racist for them to even consider this, but that is the direction.
There was a channel the other day. The channel name was Holy Shit. Hoary Shit. I didn't get it.
Hoary Sheet. Hoary Sheet. But the thing is,
that's racist. Well, I didn't get it though. But this, I don't understand.
Yes, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. Because there was an Asian person as their avatar. They're trying to say like "Holy shit," as an Asian person would say it. So he spelled it out.
Yeah,
Hoary Sheet.
That's racist. Sure.
Yeah, that's racist. Let me get through this real quick so we can get on with the debate real quick. But I just want to I want to let you know where it's gotten to. This says that some of the other phrases that were on this list include you guys, and y'all. Y'all.
Oh, y'all is now going to be racist. Oh, wow. Yeah. Right. Okay.
And it says, which is gender neutral and ungrammatical, but it's apparently less of a concern. They said that this terminology is just not preferred. The college campus said that we need to raise the possibility that this could offend Chinese or Native American origin. The phrase is so widespread that it's impossible to tell its impact on society. It doesn't have an impact on society.
Yeah, no, none. I would tell y'all to fuck off if they were telling me that shit. I would laugh hysterically in their face.
I said this last night. This is the last thing I'll say about it. But I want you guys to listen to me. I said this last night. This is exactly why people like Trump are able to become president, because you have a subsect of people on the left who are so worried about policing what people say and how they say it and who they offend, that the people on the right go, well, we don't want that kind of country. We don't want a country where I can't say long time no see to somebody. So they're going to vote against that. So how about getting behind things that really matter and not some dumb sentence like, long time no see. Grow the fuck up, please. Okay.
So if they're going to ban
long time no see,
like, could they ban any other, like, phrase that contains the word see or refers to seeing things? Like, don't lose sight of the conversation, okay?
How dare you? We're demonetized now. Thanks, John.
Well, I mean, I use the word dude all the time. If people have known me, know that I call everybody dude. Doesn't matter what gender you are. Dude is just my thing, right? I've done it for years. Is that all of a sudden going to be, like, politically incorrect if I call somebody a dude? No, I'm still going to call people dudes.
I'm a dude. The way I You're speak. A dude. Like he's says, a dude. We're all dudes.
He says Southern type things. I don't understand half the shit that Kyle says, but it's Southern. And I'm sure that the people from the South know what the hell he's talking about.
Well, apparently the chat says that it's the phrase long time that is the problem and not
long time. I don't get it.
That makes no sense. God, this is so stupid.
I don't know. Either way, it is stupid. And so if it's not about the whole, if it's not about like Asians being able to see, then I don't know what it's about. And just to preface, I don't think that about the Asian people at all, but that is like the meme that goes around on the internet about it. So I was just trying to explain that situation, if that is what it's talking about, just so that nobody's he's racist.
And thank you for getting my Good Burger reference, Justin Hooman. I that went unnoticed, and I'm glad that it didn't with you, sir. You win the night. Okay, so we are now going to jump over and get into the debate for tonight. By the way, go vote for the Golden Nuns. It's next Sunday. You can go to tinyurl.com/GoldenNuns and vote for your favorite content creator. One of these guys here in this call could be a winner. And I think actually Godless Engineer is in the top – he's in the top five right now. So go and vote. Let's start out with introductions, though. Chris, let everybody know who you are and what you do and why you do it and all that good stuff.
Okay, well, I'm Chris. I'm one of the Biblical History Skeptics. It's a channel that we just started up a few months ago, me and my friend Brian. And we are basically reading through the Bible from beginning to front and seeing what scholars have to say on the matter, doing a bunch of research, figuring out what it is that scholars are currently thinking and possibilities of other things that are being thrown around right now in scholarship. In the meantime, I mostly float around other channels. I've been on Steve's quite a lot. So it was just on Milwaukee Atheist yesterday, actually. That's basically what we do.
You're so deep into the scholarship of Bible. The first time I actually was in a hangout with you, I thought you were a Christian. Remember how I started to go after you a little bit, and then Steve was like, no, he's an atheist. I was like, okay. All right. Switching over to – yes, I agree, Riley. I agree. Okay. Godless Engineer, please, sir, for your 76th time on the show, let everybody know – everybody knows who you are, but anyway, just for the routine of it, go ahead.
Well, since I've already entered in like a wrecking ball with that whole long time no see, I figured I'd give you a, hey, heathens, how y'all doing?
Yes.
I'm the Godless Engineer. I have my own channel where I discuss things like mythicism, general responses to religious arguments. We do a Bible reading, except unlike the Bible history skeptics over there, we're reading it from cover to cover, not from beginning to front, which must be.
Yeah, I know.
Wow, that's impressive.
I know. But we're doing that. I also do like reviews of like flat earth content and stuff like that. So there's a whole schedule on my channel every week that I go through things. And I just got memberships on my channel. So the Skeptic Mafia is a thing that you can join now. And so, yeah, that's pretty much what I do. And I'm here to talk about how Jesus probably didn't exist.
Awesome. And before we officially begin, I want to go through how the format's going to run. We're going to go 10 minutes for the first like introduction rounds to the their positions. You don't have to use the entire 10 minutes. If you don't, we'll just switch over to the next person. And then following that, we're going to do 2 5-minute rebuttal rounds. After that, we will go into like we usually have on here, an open back and forth discussion. Steve and I are going to be completely out until, you know, we close out, and then, you know, if he has any questions or if I have any questions, we'll ask that at the very end. We'll only jump in to get you guys back on course or in the event that you talk over each other. But I think that both of you guys are going to be respectful enough to let the other one finish talking, and then we'll go from there. And before we begin the whole Asian thing, John, it just reminded me of, you remember when that plane crashed and that those guys prank called in and there was like, holy shit, we too low. Bing dang out. Yeah, they were, that reporter was reading off the names of the people who had died in the crash, or the pilots. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. No, okay. I remember that. Thank you for bringing it up.
Yep. All right. So do you have a preference on which of you two would like to go first?
I don't have a preference. Either way works for me.
Okay.
I don't either. Do you want, does my sound better now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Does my sound better now? Okay.
Yeah,
yeah, I don't have a preference.
We'll start with you, Chris. Oh, we'll start with you since you're okay. Since you're making the assertion that he did. You're making the positive, so we'll start with you, and your 10 minutes starts right now.
Okay, well, first things first is I want to thank a few people. I want to thank my friend Phil, who graciously sent this to me for free. Absolutely wonderful. I'd like to thank a few of my other friends who have been helping coach me throughout this. I'd like to thank Non Sequitur for hosting. And most of all, I'd like to thank John for honoring me with the debate. With that, everyone in the chat, I want to see if you're a mythicist, a historicist, undecided, and who here wants to see me get creamed. first things first is I'm here to argue that Jesus probably was a historical figure, at least in some sense. I'm not here to argue that he was a Messiah or that the theological version of Jesus was a real person in any way, shape, or form. I'm here to argue that there was a person behind the myth. So the first thing I'm going to do is, Godless Engineer and I agreed that we wanted to talk a lot about the Gospels and the Epistles as historical objects in this when we were talking on Twitter. So the first thing I'm going to do is talk about the Synoptic Gospels. And so firstly is to dispel the rather outrageous notion that the Synoptic Gospels are all just blatant copies of Mark. They do copy Mark. Around 45% to 50% of Matthew and of Luke are copied out of Mark. However, there is around 30% in each of them that is completely unique to their books only. And you can look this up on basically on your own little Wikipedia page right now. I will not be arguing for the existence of Q like other scholars. I do think there was a Q, but I don't think it's really relevant or pertinent here in particular. So the next thing to do is then to establish if we're going to say that the Gospels are useful, can they be used as a historical text? And that is a little bit of a trickier question. I recently just watched Godless Engineer's video that he put up today on this topic, and I thought that was rather interesting. He notes that we have all the mythology in the text, all the theology, and then they're definitely pushing a theological agenda. The unfortunate thing is that that's actually common with almost all of our historical texts. Plutarch, Herodotus, all of them actually have theological agendas and that they push throughout all the texts. They push for their beliefs in their gods, push for their divine origins of many people. For example, Augustus Caesar or Romulus and other characters like that. So trying to argue that there's myth in it, so it can't be trusted, really isn't actually that strong of an argument in my opinion, though I don't think John is going to be arguing that in particular tonight. So the next big question is then, if we're going to possibly say that they could be historical, what parts of them are? John, I know, has actually referenced John Dominic Crossan before, saying that it's all just parable, and other scholars who say that as well. Richard Carrier, I know, does not consider them evidence for or against the historicity of Jesus. In his book, he basically considers the Gospels able to be explained by both mythicism and historicism. The issue with this is that actually, for example, like referencing John Dominic Crossan, as he was actually part of the Jesus Seminar, they all agreed that actually around 12% of the sayings in the Gospels could be traced back to Jesus. John Dominic Crossan himself in his book actually argues that many of those parables and stories of Jesus' life actually could be traced back. So, yeah, we have basically unanimous scholarly consensus that he did exist. I'm not going to be arguing from the consensus, though. So what is it that in there that is going to then be historical is the question. What is it that we can gather that is historical? Obviously, we can't consider the parts that Matthew and Luke copy from Mark to be automatically reliable because they're just copying from Mark. So they're, really, you only have one source, right? Well, then what we have to do is actually look at the material that they have outside of Mark that would corroborate with Mark. Luke's depiction of the crucifixion, for example, doesn't appear to be copied directly from Mark. He makes a lot of his own ideological pushes through it. So he obviously didn't see the need to do that. We also have then another gospel that I haven't talked about yet, which is the Gospel of John. The Gospel of John does not actually make use of Matthew, Luke, or Mark, for at least what most scholars' opinions of it have been. If he had access to Matthew, Mark, and Luke, he didn't see the need to directly copy them. We know this linguistically because he shares almost nothing similar with those Gospels, that from what I've researched anyways. So he would actually account as an independent source for a lot of those events. For example, the cleansing of the temple, the crucifixion. So that would give us another possible source. I know GE will probably bring up how late the Gospel of John is, though, probably around 90 to 110 CE or so. So around the same time as Josephus was writing. So, yes, that is an issue, is the lateness of the text. And that's one thing that he brings up in his video, is that we have to consider how late these texts are coming into being. One issue with, though, trying to argue a text is too far removed from the events to have any information is because that is unfortunately true of most of our historical figures and events, is that they're separated anywhere from 50 to 100 years, if not more. That's true in the case of Alexander the Great. The only possible contemporary source we have is the Babylonian Chronicle, and that could date as far ahead as 100 years after him. We don't have a fixed date for it that I know of. So if we're going to try and say that, then we could actually dismiss most historical events as not being reliable enough to actually ascertain that they happened. So I don't really buy into it. It is most certainly pertinent because the farther away you get from the event, the more likely it is that it's going to be corrupted by some mythology. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a hint of history in there. So that's why we then have to cross-reference it with older sources, which then takes us to our oldest sources about Jesus, which are going to be the epistles. The epistles, I know we are definitely going to disagree on. I know John is going to argue that Paul's conception of Jesus was a celestial Jesus, if I'm not mistaken. That I definitely don't agree with. I'm going to provide a few examples and why I think that they argue for historical Jesus briefly, and we'll get into that more, because how much time do I have?
You have 2 minutes and 15 seconds left.
Okay, so let's just go straight to there. So I'm just going to skip some of the lesser ones, Romans 1:1-4, Galatians 4:4, Romans 15:8. You guys can look those up on your own, but the ones I'm going to bring up is 1 Corinthians 9:5. Do we not have the right to take along a believing wife, as do other apostles and the brothers of the Lord Cephas? Note that he's contrasting the brothers of the Lord against Cephas and against the apostles. They're not the same. So he is clearly differentiating the brothers of the Lord. So they're not the same. I don't think he's talking about a metaphorical brother in that sense, because if you're going to try and talk about a metaphorical brother, obviously Cephas, I think, would qualify. Then we have the famous passage in Galatians 1:18-19 that talks about the brother of the Lord, James, and that contrasts him also against the other apostles and Cephas. They are not brothers, only James is. Where else do we find that James is a brother of Jesus? We can look at the Gospel of Mark, chapter 6, verse 3, where it lists his brothers being James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon. And I want to bring up here that it only brings them up as being brothers of the same mother. That's going to be relevant later on in our discussion when I talk about Josephus. And then another reference to there being brothers is the Gospel of John, chapter 7, verse 3. Then you can further, there's one more that I think that's going to be really good for my argument. 1 Thessalonians 2:14-16. Be imitators, brothers, of the churches of God that we are in Judea in Christ Jesus, because you yourselves suffer the same things by your own fellow citizens as do they by the Jews, who killed both the Lord Jesus and the prophets and are persecuting us. I don't know how one can really get around that without arguing interpolation. I will leave it there. That is my introduction.
All right. Awesome. Milwaukee Atheist, by the way, says, guys, I like both these guys, and I'm excited for this. Good luck to both of them. I'm hearing an echo. Who's got the stream going?
Not me.
Chris, can you?
Oh, okay. Here. Yep, it is.
Oh, you lying? Okay. That was engineer. The next time, 10 minutes is for you, and that's going to start right now.
First, I want to say, we agreed beforehand.
Whoa.
Hang on.
John, you're
going to have to, like, reload. Yeah.
Yeah, you're... We're getting every other word.
Sounds like Kyle's chat, old internet.
Milwaukee Atheist.
Did Kyle hand him down his old internet? Because Kyle has new internet now. Did he give you his old one?
I think if he resets, it should pop him right back in.
Yeah, he just needs
to probably just the, sputtering.
The call, yeah.
But yeah, thank you, Milwaukee Atheist, for the super chat. All right. Can't hear him at all. You getting any audio levels, Dave? Okay.
People are saying he was probably speaking.
There we go. Now we've got him back.
Yeah.
I can hear John.
Okay.
All right. Reset the clock, and whenever you're ready, go.
Okay. So thanks everybody for being here. Thanks non sequitur. Thanks Bible history skeptic for having the conversation. I guess we'll start with the New Testament Gospels. First, I have done a much longer conversation on the reliability of the Gospels, and I'm not going to go through that entire thing, but I'll summarize it a little bit. The New Testament Gospels are not reliable in any sense. That includes theologically, textually, and historically. Textually, we have no idea how much the Gospels have changed in the first 100 to 200 years of their existence, because we don't have any copies that date prior to the 3rd century. We do know that after that point, thousands of scribal errors, both intentional and accidental, can be tracked throughout time. Historically, they aren't reliable because the Gospels were written to teach theology not to record history. And just like Bible history skeptics said, I do cite John Dominic Cross and Power of Parable. And I get that not just because they're parables doesn't mean they can't contain some kind of historical significance. And what I would say is that really clouds the intention of the work. And it like I said before, there's so many scribal errors that happened in what we know of the Bible's transmission, what we don't know of the Bible's transmission. We could be for certain that what we have now is definitely not what they started out with. So that's a little something to think about. Theologically, the Bibles can't be trusted to give us an accurate description of what the early Jewish Christian communities were teaching because of these reasons. The Gospels aren't independent accounts, like Bible history skeptic says. They are anonymously written, with Mark being the first one written in the 70s. We know this through internal indicators, like the supposed fall of the Jewish temple, that kind of indicates to us that it was written between 65 and 75 or so. Now, Paul wrote in the 50s. So Paul's theology had actually been on the scene for at least 20 years, and this is painfully evident in Mark's gospel. We can only speculate as to what sources inform Mark, but we do not know that he begins his gospel by appealing to a historical source, but to the scriptures of Judaism. Those are actually the first few lines of his gospel. He starts quoting a malformed prophecy, and that's actually a mishmash of different verses. Mark does this because he considers scripture to be more reliable than human testimony. And this is the same with Paul, which we'll see in a minute. And I would be interested to get his resources, Bible history skeptics resources, on how much of Matthew and Luke copy Mark, because the figures that I found in multiple places cite 90% of Mark appearing in Matthew and 50% of Mark appearing in Luke. Now, the Gospel of John, as he denoted, is simply too late to be considered to have any good historical information in it. But it's not because it's just a long amount of time between the event that supposedly happened and when it was written, but the fact that there are other textual documents and theology to inform John's gospel. By the time John's gospel was written, not only did he have the three other gospels, but he also had Paul's theology and a up-and-coming Christian community that could have informed him. So it's not simply the amount of time that happened. It is also compounded upon the fact that you have all of these other resources for him to use in order to generate his gospel. And so that is what makes it not an independent source, or we can't really say for certain that it is an independent source. As I said before, all of this is kind of covered in the Reformed Christian Apologist debate. So if you want to check that out, go and look it up. Let me go ahead and head on into Paul, because I know BHS didn't really spend a lot of time on the New Testament. But now on to Paul. Paul never saw a physical earthly Jesus. As he states in Galatians 1:11-12, he says, and I'm quoting this from the Bible, "I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that the gospel I preached is not of human origin. I did not receive it from any man, nor was I taught it. Rather, I received it a revelation from Jesus Christ." Tim O'Neill on this very channel stated that Paul is just simply lying at this point, which Tim denies that he said that. But in this verse, that kind of adds the assumption that Paul lies to his Christian audience. Then the question becomes, what else did Paul lie about? I find it to be a much simpler and a parsimonious answer or hypothesis that Paul is just telling the truth here in that verse. Paul shows us that visions and scriptures are way more reliable than human testimony. He repeatedly affirms that he received his information from the risen Jesus himself or the scriptures. Even when Paul discusses things that seem to confirm an earthly Jesus, like the Last Supper or the Lord's Supper, as he actually puts it, he prefaces it with, "For I received from the Lord what I also delivered to you." That's 1 Corinthians 11:23. He's emphasizing that he did not actually see this happen and only knows of it because of his vision of Jesus told him about it. You can assume that he's lying here, but I think that's a bit disingenuous to do. There is one aspect which BHS actually brought up, which how much time do I got?
You have 3 minutes and 45 seconds left.
Okay. So the one aspect is the Galatians 1:19 or these other verses that refer to, the brothers of the Lord. And actually in Galatians 1:19, it says, I saw none of the other apostles, only James, the Lord's brother. But the actual phrase here is brother of the Lord. Paul uses a very specific Greek word for brother, and that's adelphos, which I'm probably mispronouncing. Now, there are multiple ways in which this word can be used, but it can mean a blood brother, or it can mean a fellow believer that's not blood related. So we have to look at what Paul's theology was around the idea of brothers and how Paul is using adelphos in other places in his writings. So Paul's theology surrounding this subject is that all baptized Christians were children of God, and the brother or sister were not, and our brother and sister to Jesus himself. As he cites in Romans 8:14 through 17, for those who are led by the Spirit of God are the children of God. The Spirit you received does not make you slaves so that you live in fear again. Rather, the Spirit you received brought about your adoption to sonship. And by him we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ. If indeed we share in his sufferings in order that we may also share in his glory. This same sentiment is repeated throughout the epistles, namely Romans 6:3 through 10, Romans 9:26, Galatians 3:26 through 29, Galatians 4 through 7, Hebrews 2:10 through 18, Ephesians 1:5, 1 John 5:1 through 4, and the list goes on. So because Paul's theology has every baptized Christian as an adopted child of God, he would definitely need to specify that he was talking about a blood brother of Jesus. Paul doesn't seem to need to make this distinction in Galatians 1:19. And in fact, in that same context, Paul starts out by saying, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that the gospel I preached is not of human origin. That's Galatians 1:11. Here Paul identifies everyone he is speaking to as brothers and or sisters using the same language as when he talks about James later. Paul's theology does not change on this particular understanding of Christian theology. In Galatians 1:19, Paul is talking about different groups of people with Cephas being in a totally separate group than the random Christian James.
1 minute left.
How much time do I get? Huh?
1 minute. 1 minute.
1 minute. So, what I would say kind of in summary for my little introduction here is that Paul doesn't ever see Jesus on earth. He only sees visions of Jesus and he gets information from the scriptures. And the scriptures we know to be the Old Testament or the Septuagint or the Pentateuch, whatever. Those were his scriptures. And we definitely know that, you know, there were Jewish Christians that were looking to the scriptures, regardless of whether or not these things were actually prophecies of Jesus. That doesn't matter because the early Jewish Christians were thinking that they were prophecies of Jesus. And there's a lot of evidence I could throw out there that suggests that. I don't know. I'll have to cede the rest of my time because I don't really have anything else to say.
And you just ran out. So awesome. That was perfect. All right. Let me reset the clock real quick. And our first of 2 5-minute rebuttal rounds will begin now. Chris, your time begins now.
Okay. So you noted that, first, I wanted to note that actually we do have many second century texts of the New Testament. We have some that do date before the third century. For example, P52. P52 is the earliest example we have of the Gospel of John. It does have a small variant, but it is a tiny lexical variant that is really not that important, actually. It was written within, I believe, 50 years of the Gospel of John. So you can look that up yourself. We have numerous that were written within around 100 years of the text that seem to that are reliable with our later texts as well. Okay, let's see. Next thing that I wanted to respond to is the reliability on the reliability problem. So as I actually noted, is that we actually have a lot of mythological and theological problems with other texts. Let's take, for example, Herodotus. How often does Herodotus appeal to different gods and divinities in the in events and discussions of things that he's talking about consistently? Should we dismiss Herodotus because of that? No. We need to decipher what is historical and what is myth. That's the difference. And that is the same with all ancient historical texts that we deal with. For example, our best sources for Alexander the Great are like Livy and Plutarch and a few others. They all have mythologize Alexander the Great. Another issue that brought up, so Mark, I'd like an example of where Mark quotes Paul ever or makes use of Paul clearly. Because when he opens up the book, I do admit he does use the scriptures, but he's quoting from Isaiah, actually. He's quoting from the Greek Septuagint from Isaiah. Another issue that we have is when trying to relate Mark in particular to Paul's writings, Mark is theologically opposed to a lot of what Paul has to say. Paul, you and I will both admit, believes that Jesus was a pre-existent being. I think we both agree with that. Mark doesn't. Mark doesn't talk about his birth, his pre-existence at all. Actually, it begins with him being basically adopted by God at baptism. So actually, it's what is called a low Christology. He believes that he was a physical human being that was adopted into divinehood. We also see that in the Epistle of Hebrews, which all I wanted to actually note the when you were listing other uses of Adelphos and that context, the only ones that I saw that you listed that were actual Pauline epistles that Paul himself wrote was Romans, Corinthians, and Galatians. Ephesians was not written by him. Hebrews was not written by him. But wanted to also ask, so if he's talking about brothers in general, saying brothers, like saying James is just, you know, a brother in Christ, why doesn't he call Cephas a brother in Christ? Why doesn't he just say, and the only other brother of Christ I saw was James? Why does he say apostle and then give him the epithet, the brother of the Lord? Why is that? Why is James special and Cephas is not? Okay. You also misquoted me on the percentage. You misunderstood me. I was not saying that they only took 40% of Mark. They do use about 90% of Mark, but it only makes up around 40 to 50% of the content of Matthew and Luke. That's the difference. And you can look this up basically on your own little Wikipedia page, just right there. So I will cede the rest of my time.
Okay. All right, let me reset the clock real quick. And John, your 5 minutes begins now.
Okay, well, I'll kind of start in sort of reverse order with my notes that I took from his introduction. So first of all, I didn't use Wikipedia, and I find that to be rather condescending, and I don't really appreciate that. Okay.
No. I didn't use
Wikipedia for that.
Wrong, Chris. Go ahead, John.
So like I said, working backwards, Kephas, why didn't he use brother of the Lord to describe Kephas? Well, Kephas is obviously very important to the Christian community at the time. So, I mean, he set him aside. Like, he was a separate, Christian person than these other people, like even of just other apostles, because he was important to the community. And the reason why he didn't use brother of the Lord with him and then did with James is because he apparently didn't know James like he knew Kephas. So, or rather, Kephas was, I guess, higher up in the hierarchy of the religion at the time, or whatever reason he felt the need to delineate that, the Kephas, the apostles, and just general brothers of the Lord, for whatever reason, all he was doing is segmenting out the types of Christians that were there. You say that Mark doesn't talk about a pre-existent Jesus at all. You do mention the adoptionism when he was baptized. And what I would say is that in the picture that that particular part paints has the Holy Spirit or some entity coming down from heaven to adopt him or inhabit him. And so I would say that there's no direct, like, pre-existent Jesus in Mark, but I would also say that I didn't argue that Mark has a pre-existent Jesus in it. And I would say that the adoptionism in general is kind of a pre-existent kind of doctrine. But anyways, I didn't argue that Mark has a pre-existent Jesus in it. You state that there's an Isaiah prophecy in Mark, and what I technically said was that it was a mishmash of prophecies because they actually pulled from different prophecies from the Old Testament in Isaiah. And while Mark specifies Isaiah, later Gospels come back and try to correct that by saying by just generalizing prophecies in the Old Testament. So there's that. You also talk about Herodotus and Alexander the Great. For one thing, we're not talking about these particular sources or whatnot. I know you're trying to bring them up to contrast them with this. I'm not saying that merely because they are mythical, that doesn't mean that Jesus didn't exist or probably didn't exist or anything like that. I am saying that because these things are mythical, we can't trust them to have like any kind of actual historical evidence for the particular figure of Christ. And I think that that is a little bit different than saying that they don't contain any kind of historical information at all. You bring up P52, and I do believe that P52 is a fragment and not an entire gospel. So, saying that you have one fragment that comports with part of I believe that's Gospel of John, does not necessarily mean that the entire things, the entire Gospels are transmitted reliably.
1 minute.
So, and then you brought up 1 Thessalonians 2:14 through 16. And I mean, maybe we can go back and forth on this later, but I know that's kind of an extensive conversation. The Mark's brother's verse that you brought up, I would say is not actually proof that he had brothers or anything like that. I still think that that's a theological thing that was meant to teach a lesson about how Christians are consider each other in the Christian faith. I did notice that you corrected me on a couple of my references, notably Hebrews and Ephesians, and I probably just went on a copying spree without regard to which ones were actually written by Paul. So my bad about that. I am wrong about that. So you brought up a lot of different Bible verses. Maybe we can go through those later. You said that Paul doesn't contain a celestial Jesus, but it's pretty obvious that he does. You say John is an independent source, and I think I gave pretty reasonable answers for why he's not actually an independent source.
Tom.
Yeah.
All right. This will be the last 5 minute round, and then we will open it up for discussion between the two of them. Let me reiterate one time, once more, please make sure that we don't interrupt. Let the other person finish out. That time is coming. Just make sure that they get to say what they want to say, especially when it's their round. All right. Chris, your time begins now.
Yeah, I want to apologize, Godless. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to imply that you were only using Wikipedia. I just meant that you could go look up the percentages there. That's all I meant. I was not trying to insult you in any way, shape, or form. So I apologize if I came off that way. So, why is it? I didn't find your answer as to why Cephas is not a brother of the Lord that convincing. Because there's because it is like when you assumed that Cephas was higher up on the chain. Actually, in other sources like the Book of Acts and such, we learned that that James was considered head of the Church of Jerusalem in Judea. So why is it? Why I don't understand how Cephas would be considered higher up on the chain of command, especially when Paul notably actually tries putting Cephas in his place numerous times as well. Also, then there's the problem that he also brings up the Apostle John and a few others. He doesn't refer to John as a brother of the Lord. There's the issue that actually I wanted to respond when you said that at the baptism, the Spirit in Mark descends on Jesus, and I guess you seem to imply became part of him. Is that correct?
I said that it inhabits him.
Okay.
Him.
I want to know where that is. I'm going to read the passage. At the time, Jesus came from Nazareth in Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. Just as Jesus was coming out of the water, he saw heaven being torn up open and the Spirit descending on him like a dove. And a voice came from heaven, "You are my Son, whom I love. With you I am well pleased." At once the Spirit sent him out into the wilderness, and he was in the wilderness 40 days being tempted by Satan. He was with the wild animals, and the angels attended him. Where does it say it inhabited him?
It does. Save that for the back and forth, Chris.
Yeah. Anyways, it doesn't say it inhabited him at all. Actually, it implies that it sent him out into the wilderness. It's a separate being of him from him. I did not find your argument against John that strong. Just because sources existed before him doesn't mean that he was using them, especially because we don't really have much evidence that he was using at least any of our New Testament writings that we have. He definitely didn't feel the need to copy the synoptics. How much time do I have?
You have 1 minute and 45 seconds left.
Okay, so where else? Honestly, I don't have much else. I just want to apologize again if I was for interrupting and because I if it made me seem like I was trying to insinuate you were just
like
using Wikipedia, because that's not at all.
It did.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I wasn't trying.
You're good. You're good.
I apologize, Godless.
All right, G. Let me reset your clock real quick. And your 5 minutes will start now.
Well, just like you pointed out the Alexander the Great and Herodotus, I'll point out other external references to Jesus that we do actually find. None of those specifically state that they're using any Christian sources or anything like that, but it's pretty obvious that they actually do use Christian sources. Because of how, not only how late they are, but because of the information that they actually present in it. Like, for instance, with Mar Bar Serapion, he actually blames the Jews for killing Jesus instead of the Romans. So, I mean, that's one way that we know that, you know, Mar Bar Serapion was getting his information from an existing Christian community, whether it was oral theology or written documents, it doesn't matter. We know because of what's in it that he was getting it from there. So it's not so much that we definitely know in any kind of case, because in history we don't really know definitely about any of this. I would say that it's more probable that John got his information from the existing Christian community that was there in the second century, rather than him being an eyewitness, considering the amount of time between it. There's nothing to say that he was working off of firsthand sources to inform it because of how late it was. So there's that. And then you kind of have a problem with naming specific apostles and then just calling James, brother of the Lord. Now, I didn't say, I said that Cephas was higher up on the ladder than James, that's in Galatians 1:19, but I don't think that that is actually James the Just. James the Just is later named, but this particular James is not James the Just. You know, he's not described that way in any kind of form. Plus, in order for you to argue against you know, him just being a regular Christian, you have to ignore the theology that Paul has surrounding brothers of the Lord. Sans the mistaken passages that I cited earlier, all of those plus many more show how Paul considered just regular baptized Christians to be brothers and sisters of the Lord. So you have to completely ignore his whole theology on the brother, like what it means to be in the family of God or to be a brother or sister of Christ. And then you had a problem with Cephas not being a brother of the Lord. He doesn't say that Cephas isn't a brother of the Lord. He just lists James as a regular Christian, sans the, you know, the other other apostles, and then Cephas, which he seems to know, or at least have a better rapport built with him, just like with John and the other apostles that you named specifically. And so, yeah, I don't have anything else that he really cited. I don't think I apologized earlier for including the wrong like verses or whatnot, but yeah, I was wrong in that. You were right, and I totally love that you corrected me on it.
All right, and now we will we'll go into the discussion round. Chris, since it seemed like you had a question a few minutes ago, and since she just went, we'll let you kick it off with the question that you wanted to ask a little bit ago. And just okay. Ask that you don't talk over each other and let each other finish your sentences, and then we won't have a problem. Cool.
Okay, so yeah, the one I wanted to first ask is, where does it imply that the Spirit inhabited Jesus in Mark's baptism?
Well, I didn't specifically say that the text says that it inhabited him. I said that the picture that the text paints seems to show the Holy Spirit, or the Spirit descending from heaven and inhabiting him. So unless Jesus is seeing a ghost or something like that, I mean, this Spirit has to be somewhere to direct him or whatever. But the general adoptionist view is that Jesus, when he was baptized, was adopted into the sonship of God by the Messiah basically inhabiting his body. Now, it doesn't have to directly use the word inhabit in order for that to happen.
Okay. The issue I see with that, though, is that did the other angels inhabit him as well that are in the passage?
No.
Was he just inhabited by a clan? Because it mentions that there were other angels with him that attended him.
Well, I mean, look, if you're going to ask me a question, at least allow me to actually answer.
Sorry.
You, or should I keep talking until you start talking for like a few minutes? Okay, so I didn't say that a whole harem of angels inhabited his asshole, okay? What I said was that this pre-existent Messiah figure inhabited his body as if to adopt him as the Son of God. I mean, there is a pre-existent Messiah in the Gospel of John, which I would say you can't have for a historical source, but for a theological source, it's definitely a good source for that. In the very first few verses of John has that that this Christ figure was a pre-existent figure. He was there with God at the beginning of the universe. So it's painfully obvious that this entire theology was around at the time of Mark, and Mark has an adoptionist view of Jesus, and the adoptionist view is that the Messiah inhabited this Jesus figure in order to do all the things he did on earth. That's why his birth isn't miraculous. That's why Mark doesn't cover his birth or anything like that.
Okay, so then my question then is, why is the spirit depicted as apart from him, sending him into the wilderness?
Well, I mean, in the Gospel of Mark, the Messiah is a separate figure than the man Jesus. The Messiah becomes a human figure, has this whole ministry in Mark, and then he dies and ascends back into heaven. And so I don't see a problem with this Messiah figure inhabiting the body of Jesus, walking around with it like a skinwalker, and then being crucified and then going back up to heaven.
Well, I do. And the reason I do is because you were arguing that the Gospel of John is too late and is not reliable for history. Well, given that it's that late, I could really argue very well that it's actually too late to reflect that early Christian theology of adoptionism by far, because it has no adoptionist theology at all. So I don't even think that it's pertinent to the discussion on Mark. When discussing a pre-existent Messiah, I don't see how that inhabits Jesus. I don't see how John is at all pertinent, because it's coming close to 50 years after Mark. And so,
I feel like you're not listening to me at this point, because I said that the Gospel of John, while not historically reliable, we can rely on it like theologically. And so that particular part of the Gospel of John, we know that that was at least whenever John was written, that was at least there around the time of that. So it's either Jesus starts out as a divine, completely divine being, and for whatever reason Mark doesn't mention his divine birth, and then later becomes an adopted son of God, or we have this nice little evolution of the idea of Jesus where he starts off as an adopted son of God and then he moves on. Which I will say that in the Old Testament scriptures, all of the kings of Israel were considered adopted sons of God. So this whole adopted sons of God idea is central to, Judaism.
Actually, it's slightly different with the kings. So yes, they are considered adopted in some way, but actually we also have Psalms where they are actually called God themselves. God actually calls one of the kings God in one of the Psalms. So there is a slight difference, but I'm not going to really focus on that. I would actually relate it more to the idea of Romans, because Mark is clearly writing to a Gentile audience. And when you think about that, so let's think about Roman adoptionism. Romans actually put more credence on an adopted child than on a naturally birthed child. Hence why Augustus Caesar became emperor over his brother Caesarion, because he was adopted. But they don't talk about a divine being inhabiting them. And I still feel like it's a stretch to say that this messianic spirit that's not called that in any way in the Gospel of Mark, nor is it hinted at to be a messianic spirit, somehow then inhabits Jesus, and why it's more likely that that's the case than it's just a spirit that told him, that came down, relayed information from God, and then told him to go into the wilderness, like it says, where he was also attended by angels and other spirits.
Okay, well, I mean, I feel like we're just at an impasse and we have a difference of opinion here. So, I mean, I'm not going to agree with you on this, and obviously you're not going to agree with me. Would you be okay if we moved on from that?
Sure. Do we want to? I know you wanted to contest me on the Thessalonians passage.
Ah, yes, Thessalonians. So on that particular passage, I know that there's a pretty good argument that it was interpolated, and I know that there is an argument saying that it's only partially interpolated, being the very last sentence of it. But I would say that particular part of Thessalonians is way too anti-Semitic for Paul to have written it. I mean, for one thing, all throughout Paul's writings, he's never like that anti-Semitic. So it would seem to me that the more likely situation is that it was interpolated later to push a theological position, rather than Paul was not like anti-Semitic and then totally flips his stuff at that point and then is not anti-Semitic anymore. So, I mean, that's what it seems like to me.
Okay. Can I ask what your basis is for saying that it's anti-Semitic?
Well, I mean, he blames the Jews for killing Jesus. He, of course, the very end passage where he talks about, or where it could possibly be interpolated, talking about how, the wrath will come on to them or something like that. So I just feel like that entire passage, is too anti-Semitic for somebody that considers themselves to be a Semite. He multiple places in the Bible, he refers to himself as, an Israelite and a son of God and whatnot. There are some passages out there that maybe seem on the surface to separate, himself from the other Jews, but I mean, he still considers himself a Jew. The first Christians were Jewish Christians. So, Paul still considered himself a Jew. He just feels like he has been, called by God, or he has seen the risen Christ, whereas other Jews have not.
Okay. So I want to actually read the passage. And the reason I want to, again, is actually because when you read it in the context, he's not actually being anti-Semitic. He's actually talking about particular Jews. He's talking about the Jews of Judea. 1 Thessalonians 2:14 through 16, be imitators, brothers, of the churches of God that are in Judea in Christ Jesus, because you yourselves suffer the same things by your own fellow citizens as they do by the Jews or the Judeans, who killed both the Lord Jesus and the prophets and persecuted us and are not pleasing to God and all his people. He's specifically talking to the Thessalonians, and he's comparing them to the Church of Judea. So he's not talking about all Jews. I mean, we know that there's the other provinces. There's Galilee, and there's a bunch of others. So it's not clearly anti-Semitic. He's just he's noting specific people that were being specifically terrible. And it's not the only time he does this. He also does this in 1 Corinthians 1:22 through 24, and in Romans 15:30 through 31, singles out the Jews as well.
Okay, but I mean, I hear what you're saying, but just because I, let's just say I'm talking about the Jews in Hollywood. If I say something that is hateful or racist towards the Jews in Hollywood, does that mean that I'm not being anti-Semitic?
In a modern sense, yes. In an ancient sense, I wouldn't say so.
What is the difference between an ancient sense and a modern sense?
Because he's not talking about all Jews. He's not talking about all Jews. He still considers himself a Jew. He still considers Jews who accepted Jesus to be brothers and sisters. He's talking specifically about those who are persecuting and hurting people. If I talk about, say, a Jew that's hurting and killing someone, and I say that Jew in particular was hurting and killing people, how is that anti-Semitic?
Okay. Well, before I answer that question, I don't see a difference in my proposed scenario and your proposed scenario, like, at all, because in my scenario, I'm not saying that all Jews are blah, blah, blah. I was saying that the Jews in Hollywood are whatever. I'm not going to attempt that right now. Go ahead.
No, if you want to continue, I'm sorry.
Well, I forgot what your question was that I was supposed to answer. I want to make sure that I answer that.
I kind of forgot it too. I was just going to say the difference between my example and your example is that I'm not saying Jews in Hollywood. I'm saying Jews who've done a bad act a Jew who's done a horrible act against someone is not the same as all the rest. And that's the same as, like, if I say that Jew that killed someone right there, if I don't know his name, but I know he's a Jew and he killed someone, it's not racist to point it out. It's not racist to say that guy, that particular one right there that hurt someone. If I don't know specific names, that's not racist. And I mean, and again, I pointed out other verses where he does single out Jews. 1 Corinthians 1:22-24 and Romans 15:30-31.
Well, yeah, and I mean, earlier I said that there are other passages that seem to do that as well, but all he's doing is separating out Jews that have been called by God and Jews that have not, or Jews that don't believe. I mean, that's the separation that he's making in those particular ones. I mean, if you want to read verbatim one of those verses, I mean, I think that this particular situation is going to be something that we fundamentally disagree on. So I don't know if it's really all that entertaining for us to just keep fighting back and forth about it. But what I'll say is that I still don't see the difference, because you were saying earlier that he's only talking about the Jews in Judea, whereas I was talking about the Jews in Hollywood. And I could still say anti-Semitic things about the Jews in Hollywood, and they're still considered anti-Semitic. So I'm not really convinced by your argument, but I also know that you're not convinced by mine.
Yeah, the problem is that he's pointing out Jews in Judea who are persecuting people.
Okay, well, so you're saying the ultra-specific Jews in Judea that are hurting people, that's still a subgroup of the larger group. You can't say something anti-Semitic about that? Like, regardless of how many different levels of subgroups that you go down into, you can't be anti-Semitic in any one of those levels?
You can, but he's also trying to separate, because he's also talking about the Church of Judea. Church of Judea were they were Jewish. So if he just said Jews in general, he's dealing with Jews, so he's talking about Jews that are persecuting them. Jews that are persecuting other Jews.
Right.
So I still don't see how it's anti-Semitic, because he's also heralding the Church of Judea as a height of Christian exemplary. It's
okay.
Anyways,
all right, well, I mean,
are we at impasse? Are we at impasse?
I'm going to fundamentally disagree on it, huh?
I was just saying, are we at an impasse on this particular point?
Seems I mean, like I feel like we are. Either I'm not skilled enough to really converse on this point, or maybe I'm just not understanding his point about it. But you know, I still see this as an anti-Semitic passage, and so I'll keep looking into it. But yeah, I mean, that's all I can say is I'll keep looking into it and mulling it around. But as of right now, I'm pretty convinced that this is a fairly anti-Semitic passage that doesn't match how Paul talks about the Jews and with him being part of the Jews in the rest of his epistles.
It doesn't seem like you two are going to come into a consensus on this particular point. Now, Chris, I think you asked the last two questions. G, did you have any that you wanted to direct in Chris's way?
I mean, I can't really think of any other than hold on, I got a good one. So, what is your understanding of Paul's understanding of like brothers in the Lord?
Well, I think he uses brothers the way that in two different ways. The same way that it can be used anywhere else in the New Testament, as either being a metaphorical brother, or be like, you know, you're my brother, or being a biological brother. Adelphos can be used in both ways. And I think that that's what he's doing in the case of Galatians, because he's not calling anyone else, any of the other apostles, a brother. And he doesn't really do that with like the apostle John or others.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's not the question I asked though.
you asked what's my opinion on his theology of the way he uses brothers. I think
not the way he uses brothers. I asked how do you understand Paul's theology on brother being a brother of the Lord or a child of God?
Okay. My understanding of it is that to be a brother or a sister in Jesus or a child of God has to do with accepting Jesus and his particular the theology of Jesus and the message of Jesus and everything like that. If you accept that, then you become a brother in the metaphorical sense.
Well, I mean, technically, Paul specifically says baptized into the family of God. So you have to be baptized into the faith.
Yeah. Right.
So knowing that, like how do you separate out when he's talking about blood brother and when he's talking about a sort of fellow member of the Christian community?
By contrast, he calls someone brother. If he's going to say that they're all brothers, he wouldn't be calling one specifically brother or over another. There would be no reason to do that.
Okay, what kind of reason do you think he would need in order to separate out different levels of Christians?
I don't really think that he tried separating out levels of Christians.
Well, no, actually he does, because he separates the apostles from other Christians. Apostles are those that have seen the risen Jesus, while other general Christians are just people that are baptized into the faith.
Okay. Why does he differentiate between the apostles and brothers of the Lord in Corinthians?
In Corinthians, which Corinthians?
Let me pull it up real quick right here. First Corinthians 9:5. Do we not have the right to take along a believing wife, as do the other apostles and the brothers of the Lord and Cephas?
Well, right. I mean, that's the same situation as 1:19. Because he's separating out the apostles, those that have seen the risen Jesus, and then there's the brothers of the Lord, which are other Christians. And then you have Cephas, who Cephas, Cephas. I've heard it pronounced both ways, so stop giving me shit about how not you specifically, but I've seen it expressed both ways, Cephas and Cephas. Either way that you pronounce it, he is obviously set apart from the other apostles and just general brothers of the Lord. How do you distinguish using it that way? And when Paul, you know, says brothers and sisters, or, you know, he talks in general to just other Christians or writes a letter to a whole church and he calls them brothers and sisters.
Well, clearly then he's talking, it, again, it has to do with context and contrast. Contextually, when you say brothers and sisters to a bunch of people who are not your biological brothers and sisters, then they're not brothers. Then he's not talking biologically. But when you decide to contrast, because the funny thing is that he calls this James in Galatians an apostle. He says that he saw the Lord, so he's not one of the just mere brothers of the Lord. He said, I saw no other apostle but James, the brother of the Lord. So James is an apostle. This is talking about an apostle named James. So one who saw the Lord. You can respond. Sorry.
Sorry. I mean, I would say that he's setting apart there. I mean, I don't think he's obviously not including them. Including James in the list of apostles, because he's saying, I didn't see any of the apostles save for James, the brother of the Lord. So like when he's meaning apostles, obviously those are Christians. And then because he's not an apostle, he mentions this random James that's there.
Okay, here's what it says. I did not see any of the other apostles except James, the brother of the Lord. I mean, we can... The except has to do with apostle. James is an exception to not seeing other apostles. James is an apostle. He's the exception.
Hold on, what version are you reading from here?
I'm reading from the NIV.
Okay. Hold on. Okay, so if you go to the Blue Letter Bible, you can actually read it in the original Greek. And it says, other but of the apostles, none, James, the brother of the Lord, just reverse interlinear, huh? But other the gospels saw I none, save James, the Lord's brother. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I get the NIV says except for that. But I don't see James as being included in the apostles. Yeah, like I don't feel like that is including it. I feel like he is saying I saw none of the apostles, but I did see James.
Well, we can look at the Greek here. So
yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Yep. So we have I. And me, me. So it's a if. So if not. So other, however, of the apostles, none I saw. If not James, the brother of the Lord, it can still be used as a direct exception. That's actually how it's used elsewhere. You can look at it contextually elsewhere in the New Testament. That's how it's used, as an exception to a rule.
Okay. I mean, I still fundamentally agree on that interpretation of it. I mean, I feel like we're at another impasse. I still feel like you have to totally negate Paul's complete theology on brothers of the Lord in order to make your case here. Because I feel like he would have to like distinguish like brothers in the Lord, you know, the just a general Christian, and brothers like in the Lord, like of the flesh.
We'll have to agree to disagree.
Well, I mean, okay. I agree. I think most of these things we're going to come at an impasse on, because we're not going to be able, like, I'm not going to be able to persuade you, and you're not going to be able to persuade me. So, I mean, I get that you read it as that he's saying that James is an apostle. But what I'm saying is that the brother of the Lord is just a fictive, like it's a kinship title that exists in Paul's theology. And in order for him to distinguish that from being a flesh and blood brother, he would need to say that directly in the sentence rather than convolute it with his entire thoughts on brothers in the Lord. Because everywhere else that he uses that word adelphos, he means this kin, like other Christians. He means these other Christians that are not blood brothers, but they are actually adopted into the family of God and are brothers of Jesus or the Christ or, you know, Lord. So I believe that there's even a verse in the Bible, in Paul's epistles, that even say that everybody is of the seed of Abraham once you're baptized as a Christian. So, I mean, I feel like Paul's entire theology around brothers and everything like that is very much of a, you know, fictive kinship.
Okay. Well, do you want to move on to the Josephus?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a few paragraphs here on Josephus that you know, I've got notes on. So, I mean, if you want to cover that, because I know it kind of backs up your James, the brother of the Lord thing.
Yeah. I'd like to hear actually what you have on it first.
Okay. Well, I'll just read verbatim from my notes here. one external reference to back up the idea of the James being the brother of Jesus comes from Josephus. In Antiquities of the Jews 2200, Josephus says, the brother of Jesus, who is called Christ, the name for whom was James and some others. Most likely this is referring to Jesus ben Damnius rather than Christ, and who was called Christ is an interpolation by a later scribe. The original text either named Jesus as Jesus ben Damnius or did not name him ben Damnius at all. The one called Christ is exactly what a scribe would place as an interlinear note. There is a similar interlinear note that occurs in Tacitus Annals 1544 to indicate that passage was about Christ, which of course I consider definitely not to be about Christ, but Christus for various reasons, which we could go into if it really wants to go there. but the phrase used here is grammatically what we would expect to find as an antilinear note. If the Testimonium Flavianum had existed in any way, Josephus would have reminded his readers about why the Christ title was significant. He does this actually in Antiquities of the Jews 20:199, where he states he was also of the sect of the Sadducees, who are very rigid in judging offenders above all the rest of the Jews, as we have already observed. At the end, Josephus indicates that they have already covered the Sadducees. Christ being a title in Judaism would need to be explained somehow, and all we have here is a participle phrase. This is not what Josephus would write at all. Another reason to doubt this phrase is because it copies Matthew 1:16 verbatim, who is called Christ at the very end of that particular verse. It's not impossible that he came up with this phrase, but he would not use it in the same way as Christians would. That is why it's more probable that a later Christian interpolated it into Josephus's work. Also, the execution of Christians doesn't really make sense in this particular story. They not only fail to mention their crimes, but also the execution angers many influential Jews who then seek out Aeneas's punishment for the execution, which on later down in that section, they actually get Ananias removed and instill Jesus as the high priest because, you know, James was killed. Or maybe they, crap, I can't, I might have switched that around. I can't remember, I'm sorry. But we can see in Pliny the Younger in the second century was ordered to execute Christians for just being Christian. So it seems like it would be a non-issue for influential Jews that would warrant punishment. And I think that there's a few more arguments that I can probably pull up somewhere, but that's as far as I got with that. But I would say that I feel like it was an interpolated passage. I feel like there are good arguments that suggest that it actually is interpolated. So that would be my opinion.
Okay. So I know the interlinear argument. That one, that's a Richard Carrier one. I know that one. Prepared for that one. Can we screen share now? Can you have get my screen up, guys?
Yeah, and I just want to let you guys know we've got about 15 minutes left. Total, okay, so I factor that in accordingly.
Okay. Okay, sweet. So my screen is up. Everyone can see it. Everyone see my screen?
Yep.
Okay. So here's the passage right here. So 29:1. There we have James's name. There we have Jesus's name. Here's our passage talking about James. We have Esu tal lego meno Christo. Lakabos and onomoa. So I butchered the Greek. Sorry, everyone. So here's my first problem with what you're saying is that grammatically it seems like it's an interlinear note. The problem with the argument is that there's no cross referencing with any other work of Josephus. Carrier's argument in particular brings up that this right here, lego menu, the verb would be a participle clause that could spark a digression. So in order to even know if that would be true, we'd have to compare it to other references in Josephus. And what do you know? When we do that, here's the same verb, lego menos, conjugated in the nominative, and it does not spark a digression. If I have the translation, basically it says at an incline, the incline ascent of Engedi right here, at a place that was called the Eminence, and there's the title right there. So place called the Eminence. Notice actually this is more in line with the new, with what's in Matthew than what we have here. If you actually look at the Greek in Matthew, we actually have a different word in place of this in Matthew 1:16. Another issue that we have is that also for an if it's an interlinear note, I don't know why it's all in the genitive case, why it all shares the exact same case as the rest. An interlinear note, I don't think would have that, and that's not the case with Tacitus. It wouldn't share the same case as the rest of the main text. And then the other argument for it being structurally varying from Josephus, the problem we have here is that actually when you look at it, so we have it comes from the fact that the relation comes before the name instead of after, like here Jesus son of Damnius or Herod brother of Agrippa and stuff like that always comes after. However, if we wanted to know if this was accurate or not, we would just simply have to go to another passage that would have this and cross-reference it, and we have that here. Using the exact same terminology, we have brother of the same mother, brother of the same father, whose name was Eliakim. What do we have here? Brother of the same mother. Note that I brought that up earlier. Who is called Christ, that can also be used as a polemic, can be used as so-called, so the so-called Christ. James is named, and this is the same verb, that's just conjugated differently here. So you can actually see that lexically, this is consistent with Josephus. It is structurally consistent with Josephus. The only thing that we would then have the problem is this talking about Jesus Damnius? The problem I see is that if this is talking about Jesus Damnius, why is it that James is not son of Damnius? And why is it that this is consistent with Christian thought? Jesus and James, brother, are only brothers of the same mother. There is no brother of the same father as right here. And you can just look that up right there, by the same father. Why are they only by the same mother, not the same father? Why is he not a son of Damnius while Jesus is? It seems far more implicit of it being of that talking about the Jesus of the Bible. I think that there's a very strong lexical argument for that actually being original. You guys can stop screen sharing now.
Okay. Oh, infinite regress.
Here, there we go. Yeah. So, yeah, I think there's actually a very strong argument that can be had for it to be actually original instead. And if we're going to talk about him using Christos, talking about the Messiah, as I pointed out, the verb can also be used as a polemic. So it can be the so-called Messiah, it could be an insult. And it can also Josephus elsewhere actually references Vespasian, doesn't call him the Christ, but uses messianic terminology to describe him, because that was how Josephus basically got out of a hard spot, was saying that he was the Messiah, the prophesied one of the Hebrew scripture.
Okay. Well, I mean, maybe I need to look more into it or whatnot, but I mean, I'm not convinced by your particular argument. I mean, honestly, the entire story doesn't make sense if that particular Jesus is the one who was called Christ. For one thing, I mean, he doesn't explain, what that title means, like, at all. He doesn't reference anything else in his writings at all about it. So I feel like anybody reading that would, and Josephus does this too, as I showed, that he refer that he mentions that he's already mentioned this person before. I would think that if there wasn't a mention before about it, he would explain what the Christ meant. Even if it was some kind of like insult or something like that, he would need to explain why that's an insult. Also, it doesn't make sense why later on uses the same, the same name Jesus, but then it's Jesus ben Nabneus.
Well, that's because it's just the name Joshua. It was like the third most common name in all of Israel.
So was James, but that doesn't seem to stop you from the other references. James was also very, I could use the exact same argument for your Galatians 1:19. James is a very common name and very well, most probably was a name of a Christian, just a general everyday Christian.
Let me jump in real quick, because we're kind of up against the time, so we can make sure we get the questions that we have that came in and super chats. But now I'll let you guys kind of take 3 minutes if you need that at all, and just kind of wrap up your points and any last minute thoughts, and then we'll jump into super chats. Chris, start with you.
I don't have much to wrap up on. I just think that there is a strong argument to be had that he had a biological brother based off of several cross references from John, Mark, then the Mark copied one in Matthew, the Pauline epistles, and the Josephus passage. And that I think that it's very that when it comes down to it, I think that the easiest and simplest explanation without assumption, or a ton of assumptions, is that there was a physical person named Jesus who they just put a bunch of apologetics on, like they did with Alexander the Great and Augustus Caesar and numerous other figures of history. And then ending it, I just want to say thank you, Godless Engineer, for, again, honoring me with having a debate, because you are actually one of my absolute favorite YouTubers and one of the first people to really get me into discussing and debating these sorts of things.
Used to be. Not after tonight, though.
You still are. I'm not unsubscribing.
All right, Gauss Engineer.
I kind of like how it's a little bit of a backhanded compliment, because it's like, yeah, I watched you and I love your stuff, but you're fucking wrong.
Yeah.
Hey, I get that all the time, dude. You're not the only one.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, but you are actually wrong, Steve.
No, but I guess for my out, I would say that I really appreciate that, and I'm glad that, regardless of whether or not you were like, this guy's a dumb fuck, or I really like this guy, I'm glad that I was able to inspire you to really start looking into this particular field and get to researching on it and everything, because I feel like we do have a lot to learn from each other. I have been looking into this for the past few years now, and yes, I do occasionally make mistakes. What I would say is that I still feel that Jesus most probably didn't exist. And I say most probably because in history, there's no definites or absolutes. There's only probabilities. And I would say that the evidence for historical Christ falls really short on proving historicity. I feel that Paul never actually places Jesus on earth, regardless of whether or not he thought Jesus actually was on earth or whether he was a celestial being the entire time. Paul only cites him as a vision or as getting information from the scriptures. And that's our earliest reference to Jesus. And like I said earlier today in my video, I feel like it's the only truly independent source that's in the Bible. I still consider the Gospels to be influenced not only by Paul's theology, but also by the scriptures themselves. Like I said, that's pretty evident in the very first part of Mark's Gospel and in subsequent Gospels. I feel like Gospel of John is too late for any kind of historical information about Jesus, but I still think that it can tell us about the theological landscape of the first century. I still think that all of those gospel texts have been corrupted, and we can't know exactly what was in the first century. All we can do is make an educated guess about it. And I feel like the gospels and the epistles only push me towards the more mythical kind of Jesus rather than a historical one.
Okay. I just
want to say I agree with what he has to say about history. It's all probabilities in the end.
Awesome. Well, that was a fantastic debate. We ended on a agreement. That rarely happens, especially here. This was just a dumpster. No fire. Congrats.
Thanks for describing this as a dumpster.
That did come out wrong. I just mean that, you know, if the show as itself is a dumpster and the crazy ones are the dumpster fires, then this was just a very cleaned out, very nice polished dumpster. That's all that I meant. No offense. So before we jump, I'm going to let Steve ask a question, and then I'll read the super chats as soon as Steve's done. But before we do, I want to throw something up on the screen for you guys. Just a reminder, tomorrow, Aaron Ra and Jason King will be here. Maybe a dumpster fire. I'm going to bet heavily so. I'm going to bet this is going to heavily be a dumpster fire. But just wanted to, while everybody's still here, join us tomorrow. Okay, Steve, I'm gonna pull the super chats window things up, and then while I do that, you can ask away.
Okay, I only have one question, and this is to both of you, so answer in your own perspective. And my question is fairly simple: why is it that of all the historical figures, for some reason, the historicity of Jesus has a lot more scrutiny when it comes to if he actually was an actual person? As Chris has pointed out, there's just genealogical records as far as like the Heaven Brother and some other things relating to his existence. What do you think is the reason why we would look at his existence in a different way than any other, just because he's supposed to be the Son of God? Should that affect the historicity of his existence more so than any other religious leader or even just anybody in history? What is different about him that separates him to have such more scrutiny, other than the fact that of his divinity? John, you go first.
I go first, Chris.
Yeah, you go.
Okay. Well, I would say that other historical figures are definitely under that kind of scrutiny. I don't see. Other historical figures being special or anything like that. I just feel like they have different or, you know, better evidence. For one thing, you know, Jesus is on his own reference class. Not his own, like it's completely separate from any and all other reference classes, but, you know, he's a dying and rising God that was supposedly, you know, existed in the first century. And while, yes, there are other historical figures that have, you know, sources that don't date to mere years or whatnot after his existence or whatever, I would say that with Jesus supposedly starting this cult that grew so fast and whatnot, and reached so far in the amount of time that it did, I feel like there should be more, you know, references to him, or at least better references. Like, for instance, for Pilate, you know, we have references in like Josephus that talk about Pilate. But the best evidence for Pilate is actually a stone that Pilate had commissioned, or it was part of a building or something. But all we have now is a stone that has Pilate and his title on it. And then for the other historical figures, I would say that those are on probability scales too. And some of them have better evidence than others, but also a lot of them, you know, while some of them may have been mythologized, you know, in the writings or whatnot, there are other bits of evidence that we have that would solidify them in history. I mean, I didn't prepare for those particular ones tonight. I'm obviously not like a history like student, like in a university or something like that I just know all of that information off the top of my head. But I do know that we have evidence that solidifies those people in history, at least on a probability scale, to where it's more likely they were historical. Did that answer your question, Steve?
That's good. Chris, what about you though?
I think that it's a mixed bag. Part of it, I think, is that I know for sure that part of it is that there are definitely atheists that want to use mythicism as a good punch towards Christianity. There are definitely those that exist, and I've met my fair share of them. So I think that's part of why this is scrutinized so much. Another part of it is I think it's been something that's actually been a fascination for a long time, and it just continuously pops up. And I think it really, it just is because it is something that people really like in the underground that just keeps popping. That just keeps rearing its head every now and then. It was a big thing in the Soviet Union, actually, at one time. It was a big thing in the 1920s. It was started really in the 18th century. And it's just continued popping up. I think the reason that it is scrutinized so much then is just because it's just been a continuous thought that a minority of people have had for a long time. And only now has it gotten to the place that it's been able to get a lot of publicity about itself. But in no way do I think that it's invalid for being, just a fringe or anything like that. I do think that there is merit. I actually find Robert Price's arguments, for the most part, actually quite a bit more persuasive. I think it's mostly just because it's had the ability to. It's now just has the publicity to rise.
Okay. Did you want to follow up on that, G? You going to say something?
Well, I was going to say, actually, I usually try to stay away from Robert Price's arguments, because I know that he does have some kind of kooky arguments. But then again, I mean, you feel like Carrier has some kooky arguments as well. So it's kind of a mixed bag. But I would also say that, yeah, it has occasionally reared its head in the past, and it's only become more and more part of the conversation now. But that's because, you know, like, Carrier did his own research into it, and he's an actual, you know, PhD historian that has done, you know, his work, and he's just as valid of a historian as anybody else to say these things. So it always grates on me, like it grates on BHS here about how, you know, atheists like to use like the mythology of Christ or whatnot as like a punch towards it. I don't do that, obviously. I forgot where I was going with that. I'm sorry.
It's okay. No problem.
I hate it.
It'll come to you. I do too.
That happened five times tonight.
The second episode that we did on this show, I forgot Steve's name. Seriously. I opened the show and I was like, I was like, Kyle Curtis here, and I'm joined by so it's part of the charm. But, all right,
it really grates on me when people talk about like the historicity of Jesus as like some kind of fringe thing, as if to demean people that adhere to mythicism, and it's really not that. It's just that, you know, Jesus existing in history, at least the way that it's been imparted to me, is that Jesus existing in history is just immutable fact. But you see, that's the same thing that I was told about God growing up. So, I mean, I have to question that, and I just don't find the evidence for historical Christ convincing. And I think that with the scholarship that's starting to come out and the mythicist list as far as like actual scholars continues to rise, I think that we'll see an eventual, you know, mythicism become more and more of a mainstream idea. Because if you look back to when we were investigating like the Pentateuch and how that was written, now the mainstream consensus is that Abraham didn't exist, Noah didn't exist, you know, like Judges is not historical at all, and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that being the consensus and how that entire consensus changed, I think is kind of a look into the future for mythicism.
I look at it like this. I don't know, like, where honestly I come down on the issue, because I've heard, like, we've had Carrier here several times. We've had Tim O'Neill here several times. We've had many of these debates on Jesus mythicism, and to me, it's one of those things where, I guess, since it doesn't really affect me one way or the other. You know, I don't feel the need for me to come, like, that kind of urgency to come down on the side. That's why I can sit and listen to, you know, like Carrier one day and then Tim come in the next day, and they both seem to present pieces of evidences that sound convincing or that sound like they may be, you know, somewhat plausible. I guess if I had to pick, I would be leaning on the he didn't exist side, like if I absolutely had to choose. But why, like, GE, why is it important to you that this issue be, you know, kind of sussed out and brought to the forefront? Like, why is this an issue that we should concern ourselves with?
Well, interesting you asked that, Kyle, because I've actually done a video on that very topic. And I feel like it's important regardless of the outcome, because I to me, like, knowing what is true, or at least having a good sense of what is true, is important to me, and not just blindly accepting, like, the consensus, knowing why the consensus is established and knowing the actual good evidence. Like, a lot of people compare me and other mythicists to, like, climate change deniers or creationists and whatnot, and I really hate that kind of derogatory rhetoric, because it's really not that. I mean, I'm actually looking at the sources and making informed decisions regardless of whether or not I'm wrong about it. Whereas creationists and climate change deniers actively deny, like, mathematical, hard, like, evidence for it. Like, with the rising global temperatures, you have to actively deny physical data in order to say, nope, global temperatures aren't rising, or, you know, climate change isn't affected by man. When looking at that data, you have to actively deny, like, the data in order to do it. I'm not actively denying anything. A lot to do with history is a lot of, like, I guess you'd call, I guess, soft science. Like, there's nothing hardcore about it. Like, there's no hard evidence that can port you in either direction. There's only evidence that can strengthen a probability that something was historical or not historical. Mm-hmm. And I got tired of just accepting what people told me was true. I decided to look at the evidence instead of using the consensus. That's why I don't look at, like, the fact that, like, 93% or something like that of climate scientists agree that, you know, humans are affecting climate change, or human-made climate change is a thing. I don't look at that. I look at the evidence that they produce. And so that's what I'm doing here. Like, I have books by people that believe in the historical Christ. But you see, the problem is that most New Testament scholars are already Christians. And I know that there's a good number of them that aren't Christians, but I feel like their methodology is infected by a Christian lens. And so I really wanted to get to the bottom of it, and I just found the mythicist argument to be way more compelling.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, just because you brought up climate change, I don't know if you saw Steve and I's climate change episode, but we totally debunked that it's man-made climate change. It's CFCs. We were the forefront of that that story, and so you don't have to fear anymore. It's CFCs, hairspray. Stop using hairspray, everyone. Use pomade. It's much better for the environment. Okay. let's get to these super chats really quick so we can get these out and close out. All right, Milwaukee Atheist, $5. Thank you. I like both these guys, and I'm very excited for this. Good luck to both of them. Justin James Human, quoting Ryland Papri, is odd. P52 is idiosyncratic to the original text. The verses 18:32-38 don't match. It's contested compared with Nomnia Sarka. Say all that three times fast. Thank you, Justin. 0132132. Is it anti-Catholic to say that priests that do something horrible and their enablers are bad people and shouldn't be financially supported? I think we can all agree with that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Zach Wilkerson, thank you for your super chat. You did not leave a message, so I will insert one here for you. Zach Wilkerson says, doubt is a virtue, Steve. Thank you, Zach, for that super chat. All right. Caitlin Chloe for $10. Hello, KC. For biblical biblical history skeptical. You argue for Jesus having a blood brother, but even Catholics disagree with that. It seems like this is something basic Christians would agree on. What are your thoughts?
So the reason Catholics don't think that is the doctrine of perpetual virginity. That doesn't actually pop up as a set thing in any of Christian sources until the late 2nd century or early 3rd century. So I don't think it pertains to relevance to early Christianity because we don't have that notion going on.
Okay. All right. Stephen Steen, $4.99. Thank you, Stephen. GE claims Paul didn't believe in a physical Jesus, but also made the argument Paul categorizes Christians as seeing the resurrected Christ.
Well, yeah, the resurrected Christ is not like a physical Jesus. I mean, it's a ghost Jesus. It's a ghosty Jesus. I mean, he rose from the dead. I mean, I get it that they kind of describe him, at least in, I believe it's John, as being more corporeal or whatnot, but I mean, he died and then he came back as a ghost. So, you know, I mean, these are like, he cites visions like of the risen Christ. So, I mean, these are hallucinations.
All right. And then finally, Ronald Mendonca, I hope that's how you say your last name. Is James the half brother of Jesus?
I believe so.
G?
Oh, I'm sorry. What was the question?
Is James the half-brother of Jesus?
Oh, no.
Okay. Just to trigger. Just wanted to see if I could catch you there. You're too good.
So,
okay.
Yeah. If I could just say one thing, I wanted to actually add it on.
Oh, no. We're done. We're done.
Oh.
We're done.
Okay.
I'm kidding. Go ahead.
So I just want to say, I agree with GE. It's about trying to find truth. I actually used to be a mythicist. I used to be on the Richard Carrier side of mythicism. And I think that what the most honest thing that anyone can do is looking at the evidence for themselves and trying to make their own reasoned conclusions as to what they think is best explains the evidence when they go through it themselves and they are trying to work it out themselves, not relying on what different authorities say. It needs to be, you guys need to look at it. You need to fact check what I say, you need to fact check what everyone else says, and you need to look at the evidence yourself and come to your own conclusions. And yeah, I agree. It's all about trying to find what we can get closest to the truth in the end. And that's why I love these discussions, is because it's encouraging that dialogue, that discourse about what do we think is going to be, what gets us closest there. So that's why I'm really thankful for Godless Engineer for bringing us this.
You're just an atheist this. Christian apologist, like Tim O'Neill.
Yes, yeah, I am. People were confused that you were an atheist advocating for the historicity of Jesus, and they're like, so he believes in Jesus, but again, it's the historicity of his existence, not his divinity, that Christopher's coming from. So,
right, yeah. That's a big distinction, too. Steve, do you have anything you want to put out there before we close out?
Just tomorrow, don't forget, I'll be on the Atheist Community of Austin's Discord channel as a guest speaker at 2:00 Pacific to talk about atheism, agnosticism, and whatever else somebody else wants to talk about.
Awesome. Guys, anything you guys want to plug that you got coming up? We want to chill out?
Well, I mean, you know, I just have my daily shows on my channel, Godless Engineer. And I actually missed a show on my Facebook page that I normally run on Monday nights for this debate. But but yeah, I just got my daily show. It posts every day, 8 a.m. And tomorrow is our Bible study, actually. So if you want to tune in for that, do that.
And I believe you're going to be on with me on Thursday, right? When we talk to the...
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm going to be on ideology for... the fucking torture house.
I talked to him today. He talked to me for like 45 minutes and we kind of went through some of the things in the contract, and we're gonna touch on the points. It's a 50-page contract, but we're gonna kind of take out the highlights I've been going through it, and it's intense. Like, this is going to be a interesting talk. So make sure that you check it out. Make sure that we kind of motivate GE to change his mind and go through, because Russ said if somebody from the show wants to go in and feature it on the program, then he'll be happy to run them through Hunter House. This year, so far, the most anybody's ever made it through. Are you ready for this? Take a guess, guys. How long has what's the record this year?
6 hours.
No, this year. That is the record, like of one of the haunted houses, but like just this year. Hours. Nope.
15 minutes.
30 minutes.
Closer. 10.
That'd be me. I'd
10
be
10 minutes.
I would be the 15 minute motherfucker. I'm telling you right. At most. 10 minutes. Okay.
10 minutes. And to close out, I just want to give a big thanks to Shamar Wright, from the AT&T. Store here in Greensboro. She said she was going to watch tonight, but she really, really, really took care of me. I had some things going on with my phone today and had to go in and get that straightened out. And she was amazing. So I told her that we started talking about YouTube, and she was addicted to YouTube. And then I told her about Flat Earth, and it was all downhill from there. So hello to you, Shamar, and thank you once again for helping me out today.